That's fine.
We'll look at it. We are in Pasuk. Oh, we just in Pasuk Chof Zayin last week. We went into the whole discussion of the oral Torah, the written Torah, how it came about, how was it allowed to come about. We didn't even finish it yet. We just discussed that the written stuff you can't say by heart, the oral stuff you can't say writing, until Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi came and said that if you don't write it down, it's going to be forgotten. Therefore, he had the permission to write down the oral Torah into a formulated Talmud that we have today. Okay, so I'm Pasuk Chof Ches. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you broke the first luchas, go write the second set of luchas. So Pasuk said, Vayisham im Hashem, he was there with Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu was there with Hashem, Aboim Yom v'Aboim Laila, 40 days and 40 nights. Lechem Layachal, he didn't eat bread, Mayim Leishasa, he didn't drink water. Vayichtev ala luchas, and he wrote on the luchas, Eis Divrei Habris, the words of the covenant, which are, as the Pasuk says, Aseres HaDvarim, the Ten Commandments. Okay, so basically the Pasuk is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, and he didn't eat, he didn't drink, and he wrote down on the new set of luchas the Aseres HaDibur that he had on the first luchas. Now, Vayichtev, over here when it says, Vayichtev ala luchas, he wrote on the luchas. Who is he wrote? It doesn't say who wrote it. It just says he wrote. So some commentaries say Hashem wrote. Okay? Other people say, no, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Because the first ones, Hashem wrote. The second ones, Moshe Rabbeinu broke. So Hashem said, okay, you carve the stone and you write the luchas. So there's two opinions amongst the commentaries who actually wrote the second luchas. Some opinions say it was Moshe Rabbeinu, some opinions say it was Hashem. Now, the question, what? No, you're right. Here, when it says in the English, he wrote with the capital he, with capital H, so it means Hashem wrote. But I'm just telling you that some of Farshim learn Hashem wrote, some of Farshim learn Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. So if Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it, then it's not a capital H. Obviously, then it's only... Okay, now the question is... why does the Pasuk say he didn't eat bread, he didn't drink water? Why doesn't the Pasuk just say simply, he didn't eat or drink? The Pasuk say he didn't eat bread, he didn't drink water. If he didn't eat, he didn't drink. It means he didn't eat bread either. I mean, he didn't eat ice cream either. He didn't drink soda. He didn't. The Pasuk should have just said briefly, he didn't eat or didn't drink. But the Pasuk says he didn't eat bread and he didn't drink water. So the Mefarshim all point out, the Rechaim HaKadosh points out, the Torah is emphasizing that he did eat, but not physical food. He ate spiritual food. He ate Torah, which is called food. He drank Mayim, which is Torah, which is called water. We find in Chazal expressions of Lechem and Mayim, both referring to Torah. There's a pasuk that says, Luchu lachmu belachmi, go my bread with your bread. There's a pasuk that says, "Hey, kotzame luchulamayim." The Torah refers to water. Water refers to Torah. So when the pasuk says over here that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't eat or drink, it means that he didn't actually eat physical food and he didn't drink physical water, but he did drink spiritual food and spiritual water, which kept him alive. Okay, that's one thing. Bechlal, the Mefarshim discuss how is it possible to a human being to be without water or food for 40 days and 40 nights. We know it's a medical impossibility. But there is a rule, there's a lot of answers to the question, but one of the answers is, number one, that it was a ness, okay? That it was a miracle. Some people, we find the same thing by Eliyahu HaNavi, there's a pasuk that he also didn't eat for 40 days. And the Mefarshim explained, what happened was that the food he ate before lasted for 40 days. So it wasn't that he didn't eat, it just lasted for an extended period of time. That was the miracle. But there is a Gemara, it's a famous Gemara, the Goyim use it when in Rome, do as the Romans. It's really a Gemara. The Gemara says, Asis lekarta azal benimusam. When you come to a city, do as the customs of the city. And the Medrash explains that, what does this mean? We find in Chumash that angels came down to Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu offered them food. And if you look in the pasuk, it says, Vayochelu, they ate. So Rashi in Chumash said, what do you mean they ate? Angels don't eat. So Rashi says in Pshat, Rashi says, it looked like they ate. And as they pretended as if they ate. But many Mefarshim learn, no, Vayochelu means the angels ate. That's what the pasuk says. They ate. Doesn't mean they bluffed. Angels don't have to bluff. Angels ate. Angels don't eat. When they're in heaven, they don't eat. When they're down on earth, in the place of humans, where people eat, so the angels eat. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, place of angels. Angels don't eat. Moshe Rabbeinu also doesn't eat. So when in Rome, do as the Romans. When in heaven, do as the heavens. When in earth, do as the earth. Earthlies, whatever. So therefore, the Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu Taka didn't need to eat because he was Taka on that. Simply the pshat is, it was a miracle that Hashem did because he taught Moshe Rabbeinu Taka. He was able to teach him everything. And he didn't need to eat. Hashem sustained him. Now, it says in Kabbalah that we know, as it says in the pasuk here, there's written Taka and oral Taka. Okay? Now, it says that what did Moshe Rabbeinu learn? What was his yeshiva schedule? So it says in Kabbalah that during the day, Hashem taught him the written Torah. And at night, he taught him the oral Torah. And that's why in Kabbalah we know it says you're not supposed to learn written Torah at night unless if you're learning with commentaries, because then you're learning it with the oral tradition. But just to read Tillim, you know, people know that you don't read Tillim at night, you don't read Chumash at night. I mean, it should be the worst thing. It's better than watching television, trust me. But as a rule, you know, if you can, you avoid learning. It says, why? Because according to Kabbalah, Torah Shebiksav is daytime Torah, and nighttime is Torah Shebal Peh. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, at night, he was taught Torah Shebal Peh, and during the day, he was taught Torah Shebiksav. Then the Mefarshim also ask an interesting, discuss an interesting Midrashim. In fact, the kids say this in the Bar Mitzvah Maimer. It's a very complicated maimer. The kids don't know what they're talking about when they say it. But it's a very interesting maimer. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, over there in heaven, there's no day and night. So how did he know when to daven shachris? He was a religious Jew. He had to do mitzvahs. How did he know when to do mitzvahs? So it says, when the malachim said Kaddish, Moshe Rabbeinu knew it was day. When they say Baruch, they knew it was at night. Depending what the malachim were singing, praise to Hashem, so that's how Moshe Rabbeinu knew when it was day and when it was night. But these are all the things that Moshe Rabbeinu ended up doing on Har Sinai. But the food, that actually the simple thing is that Hashem gave him the miracle that he was able to sustain himself for 40 days and 40 nights without any food whatsoever.
There was a Jewish guy in London last year. He did it for 40 days. With food though, not only water. He drank a lot of water.
That you could do. You lose a lot of weight that way.
He lost a lot.
Yeah, I know that.
He's a lot of control.
Yeah, but it can kill you too eventually. But the bottom line is, here Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even drink. What?
Maybe there is no time upstairs. Maybe only in our world there is time. Maybe upstairs there is no time.
As far as what goes?
Davening. As far as davening.
As far as davening. It's a very good point, and it discusses that point. Is there time in the heavenly worlds, or isn't there time in the heavenly worlds?
You called him above time, above place.
Yeah, but the Lepoil, it says that even Lemaila, even in heaven, I'm not talking about on the moon. We're not talking here about on the moon, where you had different days and nights. But even in heaven, there is what's called Seder Zmanim. There is a source of time, and there is a certain element of time. And the proof of it is, when a neshama leaves the world, right? For 12 months it's being judged or whatever. And then it has a yahrzeit. Now every year on the neshama's yahrzeit, the neshama goes up to a higher level in Gan Eden. Correct?
Yeah.
Now if there's no time up there, how do you have a yahrzeit? You're talking about the neshama in Gan Eden. That on the day of a yahrzeit, the neshama becomes elevated to a level higher than it was before than the previous world, year. Huh? No, but I'm saying that what happens on the Yahrzeit. We're getting off the topic for a second, but just to explain this. On the Yahrzeit, you say Kaddish, the men do at least. They say Kaddish, right? And during the year, you say Kaddish. Now, what's the purpose of Kaddish? There's a big difference between Kaddish of the first year, or 11 months, and then the Kaddish you say on the Yahrzeit. The Kaddish for the first year, the purpose of it is to save the person punishment in Gehenna, in hell. Okay? That's why we only say Kaddish 11 months, because the Gemara says, Rishoyim burn in Gehenna 12 months. And when you say Kaddish, it protects the person from punishment in Gehenna. Okay? That's the first year. But the question is, after 12 months, 99.9% of the people are out of Gehenna. So 10th Yahrzeit, 20th Yahrzeit, what are you saying Kaddish for? To do what? In fact, it's even more. As everybody knows, according to Kabbalah, there's a concept of davening for the Omid during the year and saying X amount of Kaddishim. Why? Our minig is, based on Kabbalah, we should say 16 Kaddishim a day. And mourners should say 16 Kaddishim a day. Therefore, if you're a chiv, if you daven for the Omid, you daven for the Omid, so then you have extra kadeshim that the chazan says that other people don't say. So you have a cheshbon of 16 kadeshim a day. Why do you say 16 kadeshim a day? Because it says in the Zohar that kaddish saves a person for an hour and a half from hell. Each kaddish is an hour and a half. So you have 16 kadeshim, 16 times 1.5 is 24. So by saying 16 Kaddishim a day, it saves the person from 24 hours burning in Gehenna. That's why Shabbos, when you don't daven for the Omid, you don't have that many Kaddishim. But it's brought down, it doesn't matter because the Gehenna is closed for the day. So you don't really need to save the person that much, from Gehenna because one day a week they do maintenance in Gehenna. So they close it to clean, like the bathroom, they close to clean, you know. They close Gehenna for the... Now, but after the first year, when you say Kaddish on the Yahrzeit, why do you say Kaddish on the Yahrzeit? So it says in Kabbalah, and now this is for a Muslim, that what happens on the person's Yahrzeit is that the Neshama goes to a higher level. Every Yahrzeit, the Neshama keeps going to a higher level, higher level, higher level. Now, the Neshama sometimes, to go a higher level, needs a little push. Need a booster. So when a family says Kaddish, it boosts the neshama's ability not to save from Gehenna. It's to boost the neshama to be able to go up to a higher level again, Gan Eden. Now, so if you're talking about a Yahrzeit, there's still time up there because when it's the time down here of the Yahrzeit, the neshama, who's dead already maybe 30 years, is still being elevated on the day of a Yahrzeit. So there is a concept of time. It's not the same level of time that we have.
Which Olam is it? Olam HaBriyah, Olam
No, in Gan Eden, there's lower Gan Eden, there's higher Gan Eden, there's... Olam is a mispart. There's different levels of Gan Eden. There's Gan Eden Atacht and lower Gan Eden. As a rule, Gan Eden is in Yetzirah and Bria, you know, whatever.
How are Moshe Rabbeinu
went up? I'd never met him there. I don't know.
If you went to Olam HaAtzilut, I mean...
Moshe Rabbeinu was very high, trust me. But I can't tell you exactly which level.
Yeah,
what?
I mean, there is Ein Sof upstairs.
I know, that's what it says. Ein Lahem Menucha, Lo Bala Mazel, Lo Yelchum Mechai Lachoy. They keep going. What I'm bringing out, we're not discussing this too much. All I'm bringing out is that even though there is no concept of time to a certain extent up there, there is still time. Okay? When Hashem judges the people in Rosh Hashanah, He's judging them upstairs for the time down here. So there is Rosh Hashanah upstairs. What?
Yeah. A person that has both, two people say Kaddish. One of it does in the same time.
One Kaddish is good for, it's a two for one sale. 50% sale, Kaddish goes for both. No, it says Kaddish goes for both. Even if somebody's in Ovel, in middle of the year, they have Yahrzeit in middle of the year, they don't say double Kaddish. The Kaddish that they say is good. Okay, that's the cheshbon of 40 days and 40 nights that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai. and he didn't eat, and he wrote on the luchos. The question is, does it mean Hashem? Does it mean Moshe? The various different opinions. He wrote Esa Seres Devarim, the 10 things, meaning the Seres Dibros, which, as we learned in the past, includes within it the entire Torah, because there's 620 letters in the Seres Dibros corresponding with the 613 plus the 7 rabbinic mitzvahs. Okay, now the pasuk says like this: Here, Beredes Meshem in Har Sinai, when Meshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, Ushne Luches Aedes Biyadei, and he came down with the two Biad Meshe. I mean, the two Luches were in the hands of Meshe, Beredes Minhar, when he came down from the mountain. But this time he didn't break them. He was experienced. He was an experienced waiter. He didn't have to break the Luches. He came down, and this is obviously the luchos of Yom Kippur, which from one side were not as great as the luchos that the first luchos that Hashem himself wrote and the tablets himself that Hashem made, but nevertheless it says that if we wouldn't have gotten the second luchos, we didn't receive the second set of tablets, there would only be a limited amount of Torah given. Now that we have the second luchos oral and everything, with much 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 more, infinitely more levels of Torah were given. Now, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with the second luchos, what is the difference fundamentally between the first luchos and the second luchos? And the question goes even more, as was discussed at different times. The first luchos we got on Shavuos. The second luchos we got on Yom Kippur. Okay, that's when he came down after Hashem forgave the Jewish people, after the third 40-day period from the Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippurim. So the question is, why do we celebrate Simchas Torah Sukkos? If you think about it, the proper time to celebrate Simchas Torah, when we finish the Torah and we immediately begin it anew, should be on Shavuos. When is Matan Torah? Matan Torah is not on Yom Kippur. Matan Torah is on Shavuos. So it makes sense to celebrate your Simchas Torah, finishing the Torah, starting the Torah, Hakafis, the whole thing, it should be on Shavuos, not on Simchas Torah. Why do we do it on Simchas Torah? So Chassidus explains, because the difference between the first set of luchos and the second set of luchos is the level that the Jewish people were at that time. When the Jews got the Torah, Matan Torah, on Shavuos, the Jews were on the level of tzaddikim. They came out of Mitzrayim, newborn nation, birthday of the Jewish people. They prepared themselves 49 days of the Omer. They had all the miracles along the way. They get the Torah. That is, the Jews at that time were on the level of tzaddikim. Okay? So Shavuos, the first luchos, represents the Jews as the level of tzaddikim. Yom Kippur, the second luchos, represent the Jews as Bali Tshuva, because they sinned. And then they did tshuva, and Moshe Rabbeinu got forgiveness from Hashem, on Yom Kippur, and therefore the second luchos represents the Jews as a Bali tshuva movement. And therefore, because, even though there's an argument in the Gemara, but it really depends which level of tshuva you're talking about, Bali tshuva is greater than a tzaddik, and therefore the second luchos are greater than the first luchos, even though the first luchos were a gift from God. But if you analyze it, the second luchos were the work of man. Moshe Rabbeinu did it. The Jews did tshuva. Especially if you learn like those mefarshim that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the luchos also. Not only the psolocha, the engraving of the stone. Especially if you learn that Moshe Rabbeinu actually wrote the second luchos. So it's actually the work of man. And how did it come about? Through the tshuva of the Bnei Yisrael. Okay? Therefore, it's like tzaddikim is more of a revelation from God to the Jew. Bali Tshuva is more of the person returning to Hashem, like we learn many times, Nisan Tishrei, Nisan is Sadikim, Tishrei is Bali Tshuva, and so on. Where is the primary... No, fine. Where is the primary... I was told by a doctor it's not good for my back. Let me forget what I was thinking. Where is the primary level of festivity? Hashem says, luchos that come from yourself. Bali tshuva luchos are much greater than tzaddikim luchos. So when do we celebrate the ending of Torah, beginning of Torah, that whole Simchas Torah bit, dafke on the level of Yom Kippur. So in fact, it's interesting, Chassidus asks the question, so then we should have it on Yom Kippur. Hard saying L'chaim on Yom Kippur, though. Pretty hard.
One before and one after.
But Chassidus explained, by the way, in Maimarim it's explained, there's a Maimar from the Rebbe, in fact, that discusses this. The Rebbe explains, even after Yom Kippur, in order to come to the ultimate level, you need the 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, you need the first days of Sukkot, you need Shemini Atzeres, and then you come to the ultimate level of receiving the Torah of Simchas Torah. So really, it's Yom Kippur, but we don't do it on Yom Kippur, because you need the Avayda of Sukkot and to internalize it, whatever. So the bottom line is, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down the second time from the mountain with the second Luchas, in many respects, it's a much greater level of Torah than the first Luchas, which was a God-given gift. And that was, we discussed, who knows how many times, in the whole concept of creation, Hashem makes a perfect world. Then he says, you know what, that's great, but I did it. Now I want you to do it. So how do you make a perfect world? We've got to break the first world, right? Ruin it, and then you guys fix it. Remember the whole thing of, like we discussed with creation. The same thing happened with Torah. God says, I'm giving you a perfect Torah. You can't get more perfect than God himself making the stone, writing the letters, giving the Torah. Hashem's giving a perfect Torah. But right away Hashem says, you know what? There's a problem with this. This is me doing it. It's not you doing it. Big deal that I can give a perfect Torah. God says, what's the big deal that I do it? So what does Hashem do? Hashem says, you know what? I want you guys to make the Torah. Because then it's worth something. So he makes the egel, and he makes this, and he makes him kippur. This is all the part of the process that the Jews end up doing the luchas. And this is the second luchas that Moshe Rabbeinu came down. Okay, Vayar Aaron, Pasuk Lamed. Vayar Aaron saw v'chol b'nei Yisrael as Moshe. They saw Moshe Rabbeinu. V'nei Koran or Panav. And his face shined. His face became radiant. By the way, the Michelangelo picture of Moshe Rabbeinu with horns comes from the illiteracy of translating this pasuk. Koran, normally Keren is a horn, but here Koran does not mean horn. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't grow horns. Moshe Rabbeinu's face became radiant, which the word Koran means radiant, not only horns, but the illiterates of the, you know, the guy that didn't know what the words meant, and they see the word Karen, Karen means a horn, so they made a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu with horns. But it says, in a Karen or upon of his face was radiant, by Yiru Migesh Yaseilav, and they were afraid to approach him. In other words, it was shining too much, they were afraid to see him. So Rashi right away says, look at the power of sin. Before the Jews sinned, it says, by Har Sinai, the Jews saw the vision of God, and the glory of God was revealed, and da-da-da-da-da, you know, all of that, it didn't bother them. All of a sudden, they sinned a little bit, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with a radiant face, they couldn't handle it. So you see the power of what sin did to the Jewish people. If you don't sin, you're able to handle a much greater level of godliness. But Rashi says like this, where did it shine? From where did he get it? Rashi says, "Mehechon zochem Meishel lekarni yahid." Where did he get the horns of glory, so to speak? So Rashi says, "Rabbi Seinu amru min amayra," from the cave. If you remember, before it says, Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, "Show me your face," and he said, "No, I'm going to hide you in the cave. I'm going to cover you, I'm going to walk by you, you're going to see the back." Remember we learned the knot of the tefillin. So over there, it says that's where he merited, from that revelation of godliness, he merited that his face was radiant, and his face shined with this glory. Other Mefarshim learn, in fact the Gemara says in Shabbos, another interesting explanation of where Moshe Rabbeinu got the shiny face from. It says that when the Jews said, Nasa v'nishma, before Matan Torah, the Jews said, we'll do and we'll listen. So it says, 600,000 malachim came down and gave each Jew two crowns. One for Nasa and one for Nishma. So every Jew got two crowns of glory. They didn't wear birthday hats, the hats on the balloons. Yeah, they put hats, mean crowns of glory, of a revelation of godliness.
Spiritual.
Yeah. Then it says when the Jews sinned in the golden calf. So 1,000,002 angels, which is double 600,000, came, and an angel took off each of the crowns. That means for good, one angel was able to put on two crowns. Because it says 600,000 angels came, corresponding to 600,000 Jews, and gave each Jew two crowns. That means each angel was able to give each Jew two crowns. And there were 600,000 Jews, 600,000 angels. When the Jews sinned, so Hashem took away the crowns, but he couldn't have one angel taking off two crowns. So he needed one angel each to take off one of the crowns. So there's 1,000,002 crowns, 1,000,002 crowns, because every Jew had two. So it says, what happened to those crowns? So the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu got all those 1,000,002 crowns. And that caused the radiance.
Himself,
huh?
To himself.
Yeah, me and you didn't get it. It says in the Gemara, they were all given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So 1,000,002 crowns of, glory of Kedusha. So that's, his face became very radiant that they couldn't even do it. Now, another thing it says, they bring down some more Mefarshim. Where did he get the Luchas from? It says that they, what's it called? The Reish Lakish brings down like this. It says, there's a medrash of Yehuda, the Reish Lakish says like this. When Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, there's a little bit of ink left over at the end. And he put the ink on his head. And that caused the shiny, radiant face from the ink left over from Matan Torah. And he says, what does it mean? He says, the Aruch Chaim says, that's what the Medrash says, but it's a little spooky. I mean, it's a little concealed.
It was carved
out. Huh?
You're asking a lame.
Right, so the question is like, what is all this? You're right, the letters are carved. So he says like this. What does the Medrash mean? He says like this. Modesty, humility is the greatest of all traits. The greatest of all traits is modesty. And he says, we know the Torah testifies that he was extremely humble. So he says, in fact, it says in the Pasuk, when Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, write the Torah. Okay? So in Parshas Baleischa, it says, Umeisha Ya'anav Ma'id, Mikola Adam Ashal Pnei Adama. Moshe was the most humblest Jew that ever lived. Right? So Hashem said, right. Moshe, right. Moshe was the most humblest Jew that ever lived. Moshe, because he was really humble, he wasn't going to write the word Anav, Ayin Nun Yudvav. So if you look in the Chumash, it's Taka written without a Yud. If you look in Parshas Baleischa, here, on page 794, it says, V'ha'ish, Pasuk Gimel, sentence 3, you have to read in the Hebrew, otherwise you're not going to get it. It says, V'ish Moshe Anav Ma'id. Now, normally Anav is spelled with a Yud. Okay? But Moshe Rabbeinu refused to write it Anav. And he wrote the word Ayin Nun Vav, that means Anu, answered. So instead of writing Anav, he saved ink of the Yud. So he said, what ink is left over that Moshe Rabbeinu merited such glory? He says, when Moshe Rabbeinu had, so to speak, spiritually, the leftover ink from writing the Yud, not writing the Yud, that attribute of humility caused Moshe Rabbeinu's face to shine. And he says that's what it means from the leftover ink. First of all, by the way, just to comment on what you said, the letters of the Luchos were engraved, but when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, not the Ten Commandments, but he wrote the Torah, there was talking ink on parchment. But because of that, that's how the Aruch Chaim explains the extra ink, you know, so to speak, that he wrote because he was modest. And therefore he says it was a little bit of ink. The Aruch Chaim says, what do you mean a little bit of ink? The letter Yud, which is the tiniest of all letters. And that's how he merited to have that level of the face shining. What?
By the burning bush, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to look at Hashem. And now he's, and later on, he just said that his face was glowing. I mean, why is there a difference? Why was he afraid to look at Hashem? But yet?
Then he was in the beginning stages. He wasn't actually chosen yet to be the leader. But there's another interesting explanation over here of how, what does it mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, where did he actually get that, who says this? Yaakov Draveni says another explanation. We know when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, he says in the Chumash in Parsha Shmeis, Vateira Eisei Kitevu, that his mother saw that it was good. So there's a lot of opinions in the Gemara, and Saita discusses, one is that he was born circumcised, another opinion Rashi says was that the whole house became full of light. Okay? So it says, what light was that? What light filled the house when Moshe Rabbeinu was born? So it says that at the beginning of Chumash, when it says, Vayema lekim yehi or, there should be light. The Gemara says, that light that Hashem created on the first day was so powerful that a person was able to look from one end of the world to the next. Physically, one end of the world to the next. And he says, then it became hidden. Okay? So he says, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven, so then Moshe Rabbeinu got this or that was used, so to speak, that Hashem hid for all these generations. Moshe Rabbeinu had it on his face. In fact, we mentioned recently, at different classes, there's a famous story. Somebody came to the Baal Shem Tov with a missing person report. There was somebody who was missing from their family, and they didn't know where they were. So it says in the story that the Baal Shem Tov had a Zohar on the table. The Baal Shem Tov opened the Zohar. He looked into the Zohar and said, your kid is in this city. He told him exactly where the kid was. So the students asked the Baal Shem Tov, obviously it doesn't say that in the Zohar. So Baal Shem Tov obviously knew it himself, but miraculously, you know, with Ruach HaKodesh, where the kid is. So why did he have to look into the Zohar? I'm like, was he playing games as if it says in the Zohar? It didn't say in the Zohar. So the explanation of it is that it says that light that Hashem created on the first day that you're able to look from one end of the world to the next. What happened to that light? So there's two opinions in the Medrash. One opinion said God hid it in Torah. And another explanation is God hid it for the tzaddikim, for the world to come. So the Baal Shem Tov said that light that God hid in Torah. So if you know how to look in Torah, and you see the light in Torah, you're able physically to see from one end of the world to the next. So Zohar means to shine. So when he opened up the Zohar, he was able to see physically, so to speak, where the person was. And that's how he was able to tell that light. So it says this light, Hashem gave to Adam and Ishin, Hashem gave it to David and Melech, and he also gave it to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that was the shine, koran, ord, the light that Moshe Rabbeinu really got at the time he was born, that Hashem took away on a temporary basis. Okay, so you see, number one, that Moshe Rabbeinu became that holy that he actually didn't have to eat, didn't have to drink, he had this radiant face and so on. But the people were afraid to come to him. Okay, so now what happens? So now the people were afraid to go to Moshe, but Moshe Rabbeinu was given a job by Hashem. He had to teach the Jews' Torah that he heard on Har Sinai. That's when he started learning with the Jewish people. But they were afraid to come to him. So what did he do? Moshe Rabbeinu called them. He said, come. So they had no choice. And Aaron and all the leaders of the tribes came to him, and then Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to them. And over here, as Rashi explains, the Torah here is teaching us the order of the way Moshe taught Torah. When Moshe taught Torah to the Jews, how did it just practically, how did it work? So Rashi says, this is from the Medrash, it says like this. Dorabar says in the Braisa, what's the Seder of Mishnah? Moshe learned straight from God. Then Moshe Rabbeinu called in Aaron. Moshe Rabbeinu taught Aaron everything God taught him. Then Aaron moved over to the side and moved to Moshe's left. Then Aaron's children came in. You know, Nadav and Avihu and Elazar and Itamar, they came in. Moshe Rabbeinu taught them again. This is in the presence of Aaron. Then they moved to the side. Like it says, Elazar on the right, Itamar on the left. Then the Skenim came. The elders came. The 70 elders. And again, Moshe Rabbeinu taught them the whole Torah again. Then when they left, Moshe Rabbeinu went and taught the entire nation. So therefore it said like this. It ended up, the nation learned it once, the elders twice, Aaron's children three times, Aaron four times. So Moshe Rabbeinu actually taught the Torah to every Jew in stages. So every halacha Moshe Rabbeinu taught, Moshe Rabbeinu actually said it over four times. First to Aaron, then Aaron's kids, then to the elders, then to the rest of the people. What? Depends how much the kids misbehaved, how much you had to discipline them, how long recess was for. What else did he do for 40 years? What else did they do for 40 years?
40 days.
Oh, this was over the
40 year
period.
No, this is this is not only the day after Har Sinai.
Oh.
This is the whole system of 40 years in the Midbar. When Hashem, like even Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai. Okay? Besides the Luchas, he also had a Sefer Torah. Now, when he was in Har Sinai, exactly what period, I don't know, but Hashem dictated the Torah to him. Okay, from the beginning of Bereishis, Hashem said, okay, read Bereishis, well, yeah, he dictated Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. But he only wrote the Torah until Matan Torah. He didn't write the Torah until the end, because it didn't happen yet. They had none more mitzvahs were added in the 40 years. Right? So, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, Torah was written until Parshas Mishpatim. Meaning, the whole book of Bereishis, Shmeis Ve'eda Bei B'Shalach Yisrei, when the Torah was given. Then as things went on for the 40 years, and Moshe Rabbeinu was told more laws by God, or incidents happened, the Kedach story, the Meraglim story, this story, that story. So Hashem dictated to Moshe, okay, now we're going to write, Vayikach Kedach, Vayitza, you know, when the mitzvahs, or Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimer, Hashem said, right, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimer, Davo Bnei Yisrael, Amatav Asulim, Sitzeser, Shema Yisrael, whatever it was. So throughout the 40 years, until Moshe Rabbeinu, the day he died, continuously wrote as Hashem dictated. But whenever a new teaching of Hashem came, that's the system that it worked. Moshe taught it first, heard it straight from Hashem, then he taught it to Aaron, then Aaron's children, then... But Aaron didn't leave the room. Aaron stayed in the room. Right? And then, in fact, it's interesting, Mefarshim ask, why couldn't everybody just come in together and do it once? You know, maybe a bit of... It would have taken a quarter of the time. They could have had a longer recess. You know? But the answer is because he wanted to show the levels of respect, honor, dignity, and greatness. You know, so Aaron was the greatest after Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, the Mefarshim ask, here, the Shalom B'Gemara, the Gemara asks, if everybody should hear the halacha four times, so why didn't everybody just come in four times? Or why in this order? So he says, the Gemara answers because the people should recognize who's greater, who's younger, who's not so great, and so on and so forth. And then, you know, they keep discussing, so why didn't Aaron learn it four times, and then leave, and then come back? And But this was the process of the way actually Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah to the Jewish people throughout the 40 years. At the end of the 40 years, when Moshe Rabbeinu was dying, that's when he finished up the last 8 sentences of Chumash, saying also that Moshe Rabbeinu died.
How old was he when he died?
120.
Oh, that's where we get that, huh?
Huh?
That's where we get 120, huh?
Not from there, but it's also from Chumash, but in a different place. Okay, so then the pasuk said, "V'achrechein nikshu bnei Yisrael," and then all the Jews entered. Vayitzavim, he commanded them, "Es kol asher diber Hashem iter b'arsinai," everything Hashem spoke to him at Arsinai, and all the mitzvahs, and again, also throughout all generations. Vayichal Meisha medaber itam, Meisha Rabbeinu finished speaking to the people. Vayitein alpon of masve, he put a mask on his face. Meaning, Moshe Rabbeinu wore the mask to... It's interesting. Not only to hide the light. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Mefarshim explained, he brings on also at the bottom of the English. He wore a mask to spare the people the embarrassment of seeing how they deprived themselves of seeing the glory of God because of their sin. In other words, if Moshe Rabbeinu... And this shows the true definition of a leader. Moshe Rabbeinu could have rubbed it in their faces. You know, you see my face is shining and you can't handle it because you sinned. Moshe Rabbeinu, then the Jews would be embarrassed. So Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to put a mask on his face that the Jewish people shouldn't be embarrassed that they're not able to handle the glory of holiness like they were before they sinned.
But there's so much light. Should go through the mask.
So obviously, I was going to come to this. It wasn't a poorer mask. Trust me, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't put on a poorer mask. No. Well, it might have been also. It means. In fact, it said Moshe Rabbeinu kept this mask until he died. But in a Hasidic interpretation, masa, what does a masa do? It blocks the revelation. In other words, there are certain levels of kedusha, there are certain levels of holiness that you can handle just by doing a little bit lower, 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 lower. Okay, to give you an example in Hasidic language, in the world of Atzilus, there's a revelation of godliness, and you have the 10 attributes. Okay, chokhmah, the intellectual, and the midas, and so on. And chokhmah is higher than bina, which is higher than das, which is higher than chesed. You know. Until it comes down to Malchus. So Malchus is lower than Chochmah. The lowest is lower than the highest. But it's all in the same category. A marshal that we gave at a recent class, if you have a light on the table, a bright light on the table, the closer you are to the light, the more light you have. The further you are away from the light, the less light you have. But it's the same light. It's the same light, just more or less. But if somebody takes a shmata, a blanket, and puts it over the light, the light on the other side of the curtain is a totally different type of a light than the bulb itself. Farther away from the bulb is the same light, just a little bit less, but it's the same type of light. When you have what's called a curtain, a parcel, a curtain, that curtain creates that the light that comes down is a completely different level of light. It's not only a little bit less, it's a completely different level. For instance, Chassidus explains that from Atzilus to Bria, the next world, because Atzilus comes from the word Eitzel, which means near, close, and Bria means, in Hebrew, Bara, the Ramban says, means Yesh Mi'ayin, something from nothing. So, something from nothing means the something doesn't feel where it comes from. Because you can't say it's yesh mi ayin if you feel where you come from, then it's not ayin. Right? So, the level of Bria is completely different than Atzilus. Atzilus is a world that feels godliness, sees godliness, feels godliness, wants godliness. But then Bria is already yesh mi ayin, something from nothing, just lacking that humility, that bittul. To the extent that it doesn't even realize its source. So therefore, Chassidus explained between Atzilus and Bria, there's a curtain. Now, obviously, it's not a Persian rug hanging vertical. It's not a Persian curtain or a Chinese rug, whatever. What is it? It's a spiritual blockage that allows the revelation of Atzilus to be tolerated in the world of Bria. Because if you reveal a greater revelation of godliness from Atzilus into Bria, it couldn't handle it. Mm-hmm. Because Bria is not a vessel, it's not a receptacle to handle that greater level of revelation. So what do you need to do? You got to block it.
A veil.
That is a screen, whatever word you want to use, it's all the same thing. In Kabbalah, in Chassidus, it's called the parsa. Parsa means a curtain. Okay? Like in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a separation between the Holy of Holies mm-hmm. and the rest of the Beis HaMikdash. Why did there have to be the curtain? What, God cares if you would peek inside? What does He care? The answer is that level is much greater than the rest of the Beis HaMikdash, and you have to block it. Okay? So it came down in a physical curtain. Moshe Rabbeinu, because of his greatness of being on Har Sinai, that he actually elevated himself to a godly state. In fact, it says in the beginning of Zeisa Bracha, it says, V'Zeisa Bracha, Asher Berach Moshe Isho Elikim. This is the bracha that Moshe, the godly man, blessed the Jewish people before he died. It's the first pasuk in Zeisa Bracha. So the Mefarshim explain, what is Isho Elikim mean? They say very unique expression. What is the Isho Elikim? They say he was half man and half God. Whatever that means. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu received, especially after Har Sinai, when he was on Har Sinai for 120 days basically, 40, 40, and 40, he received such a level of Kedusha that after the Jews sinned, they couldn't handle that level of Kedusha. So there had to be a mask, meaning a blockage, for the Jews to be able to handle that level of Kedusha. Because like this, because of their sin, like we just said, they couldn't handle that level of Kedusha. So if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't be wearing it, it wouldn't be worth anything, because they couldn't have any of it. We recently again said a simple physical mushroom. If there's too much light, you can't have any of it. Right? It'll blind you. You need to limit the light to be able to tolerate it. Or as I gave another marshal recently, you went to Niagara Falls. There's millions of gallons, whatever it is, pouring water. Yeah? Crystal clear water. If you're thirsty and you want a drink, those millions of gallons are worthless to you. Why? Because if you want to take a drink, you need a little cup. Okay? So even though the cup is limiting those millions of gallons, but you know, want to know something? With the millions of gallons, you get nothing. And with a cup, you get what you need. So, if there's too much Kedusha, the Jews will get nothing. So there had to be a limitation of Kedusha, and that's the spiritual concept. Yeah, the Torah says he wore a mask. But what's the spiritual concept of this mask that Moshe Rabbeinu wore was the concept of the limitation of this great revelation of godliness that he had, that the Jews, because of their sins, we're not worthy of having. What?
You used the word for the curtain. Is that the same?
Parsa.
Also, is that the same as klipa?
No. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Is there a Hasidic terminology, let's say, from the light from Atzilut to Bria, that it's blocked? However, is there a difference between light and warmth? In other words, does some of the energy.
Light and warmth are usually used in Chassidus synonymously. Mm-hmm. The more light there is, the more warmth there is. The less light there is.
You can block out light. A curtain can block out light, but still you receive the warmth. So in other words, maybe
it blocks the warmth too. You have to understand, when you talk about light, you're not talking about beams. You know, you're not talking about light bulbs. You're not talking about spotlights. Talking about spiritual light and spiritual warmth, which is completely different. We have no better word for us. We use the light of godliness. But is it light? It's not light. Like we have... It's energy. It's, you know what? It's all one thing. Light, warmth, energy. It's all the same thing. But we're talking about light, energy, and warmth of godliness.
Atzilut is with
ayin,
no?
Atzilut is with an
aleph.
Yeah. Atzilus with an ayin is laziness. No, really, Atzil. What?
I don't know when Moshe put the mask, when he was teaching the...
Oh, we're going to see in a second. When he went to speak to God, he took off the mask.
Because, I mean, Aaron did not see him, so he would be able to...
Aaron had to do with the eagle also.
Really?
He made it.
So he did see him.
On his level, he did something wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu screamed at him. In fact, he lost two of his kids.
But
Aaron had four kids, two kids died. So it says there was a punishment to Aaron because he sinned in the eagle. And Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah helped 50%. So Aaron did have to do with the eagle. I mean, I'm sure Aaron was, you know, I don't know.
But after the eagle, didn't Moshe Rabbeinu descend in the holiness too? And didn't he have a urea?
That was at that time when Hashem was about to fire him. Or to kill the Jewish people and... But after Moshe had fought for the Jewish people and got forgiveness, he was reinstated. Bigger and better than before. They wanted to impeach him. And he won the...
won the
election. For 40 more years.
In fact, the Rebbe always brings this down with such things that there's a rule in Halacha that if I produce a document that you owe me money, okay, and you say it's a forgery... I'm talking about Bezdin, right? I produce a paper, you owe me $1,000. And you come along and say, it's forged. So what do I have to do? I have to verify the document. How do I verify the document? Either we call in the witnesses that signed it, and they verify it, or we call in witnesses that know this is their signature of the witnesses, let's say they're dead or whatever, and then Bezdin validates the document. Now what's called then at that time in Hebrew is called a henpik. Henpik is a stamp of validation. The law is, once Bezdin gives a henpik, nothing at all can uproot that document. You can't complain against it anymore. So the Rebbe explained many times about Yutus Kislev, about various different things, that when there is a prosecution against something, and the court validates it, then it's, you know, it's permanent. That means it's even greater than the first document. Because the first document, somebody could come along and say it's false. It's false. Or forged. Once you validate it after the problem, after the questioning of the validity of it, then it remains valid. And you can't do anything about it. And that's, in fact, the advantage of the second luchas over the first luchas is what? Is basically God validated it. Or Moshe Rabbeinu's level as leader also became validated in the way that it's, you can't touch it. You can't do anything with it. Okay, so it says like this. Vechal, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Let's finish the, we're going to finish the parsha, I think, today. Vechal Meshim Dabirita, Meshim Beinu finished speaking to them. Ve'yitin apad of Masri, put a mask on his face. But, Ubevei Meshim Lefnei Hashem Ledabirita, when Meshim Rabbeinu came to speak to God, when he came back to hear, speak whatever, Yosid Asamasvat Seisei, he would remove the mask until he left. And then Moshe Rabbeinu would command them this that Hashem told him to do. They saw the face of Moshe, kikar and ur pnei Moshe, that his face again was shining. Part of Moshe Rabbeinu put the mask back on his face. Until he came to back to speak to Hashem. Now, what's interesting is, so if you look at the pause, it's an interesting expression. It says, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to God without the mask, then he came to the Jews and spoke to them, and then he put the mask back on. Which implies that when he was teaching Torah to the Jews, as it says, he called in Aaron and the Jews, he taught them Torah, then he put the mask on. So there's the Ora Chaim over here says as follows. He says, uh, No, I'm sorry. The Kleyoka says this one. The Kleyoka says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu put the mask on? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was modest, and he was a Baishan. He was like, he had shame a little bit. Not shame in a negative way, in a positive way. But the Mishnah says, Le'a Baishan Le'mid. A person who's embarrassed can't learn. So Moshe Rabbeinu, whenever he wanted to learn or to teach, took off the mask. Because then he couldn't be embarrassed anymore. Because if he'd be embarrassed, he wouldn't be able to teach, he wouldn't be able to learn. In other words, if a teacher was called in English false modesty, if a teacher who's supposed to be teaching starts with this false modesty shtick, and says, no, I can't teach, I don't know, how can I teach, that's no good. Okay? So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, when it came to, he says, took the bushmi alpanov, because lo yabayshin lomad. Therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu went into the Ohel Moed to speak to Hashem, he had to take off the mask, because then there's no shame anymore. If you're embarrassed and shamed, then he can't learn Torah. So this is basically what happened with the Moshe when he came to... Okay, so this is what he did. He wore the mask, and then he took off the mask. But... Okay, that's basically the story over here. One second. Okay, the Jews are behaving. In fact, it says, one of the reasons we blow shofar in the month of Elul, because was Moshe Rabbeinu was in Har Sinai for the third time, they went up to Rosh Chodesh and came down on Yom Kippur, the Jews blew shofar every day that they, God forbid, shouldn't come to re-sin like they did in the first time with the eagle. So therefore... that was what they did. They blew shofar. Okay, Mitzvah Shem, next week we'll start Vayakel.